Hey you guys, welcome back to my Flickers of Fear movie review series. And yes, I'm finally getting around to talking about this movie. I feel like I've been kind of sleeping on it all this time. This is one I've been wanting to talk about for a long time, ever since I started doing this series. So let's get into it. So, The Babadook. It is an Australian psychological horror film. And when it came out back in 2014, it made a really, really big splash with critics and with, like, a lot of horror fans. And honestly, to this day, it still turns up on a lot of people's, like, best horror movies of the century so far lists, including mine, matter of fact. Now, because there was so much hype surrounding it, this one, and I feel like It Follows, which came out, like, around a similar time, kind of had the same kind of thing, like, oh, there's this new kind of, you know, these kind of newer, original, fresh voices in horror. So they both got, like, super, super overhyped. Because of that, there was a pretty predictable backlash against both movies, but against The Babadook in particular, with some people thinking, oh, the movie is boring, or it's annoying, or it's not scary, or I've even seen a few people say, oh, it's not even a horror movie, which I don't really understand that criticism, but whatever. I mean, I get people like different things, and you know, I'm not gonna get my panties all in a bunch about it because I have better things to do with my life. Another thing that I just learned recently while I was rewatching the movie and doing research about it is that, and this is very amusing, due to some very weird thing, I'm assuming it's like some kind of mistake, where the movie was at one point put into the LGBTQ plus section on Netflix. Somebody took a screenshot of that, and because of it, the community sort of, like, embraced the Babadook, like, the character of the Babadook is sort of, like, an icon, and they started, like, making memes about it, and there's, like, little signs, like, if you go to Pride Parade, there's always, like, some signs of it. So they started making kind of, like, all these hilarious little things with the character, sort of, like, embracing it, which I thought was, like, super funny. So I first saw the Babadook, I think, back in 2015, and I really loved it, and I kind of made a note to come back to it, like, for a second watch. And then recently, just a couple months ago, I was browsing through the bargain horror bin, like at FYE. If you don't have FYE where you are, it's kind of like a store. It's usually in malls, and they kind of sell movies and music and merch having to do with movies and music, like t-shirts and, you know, pop figures and things like that. So while I was looking through their $5 DVD section, I found a copy of The Babadook, and I was like, oh, well, look at that, $5. And I'd been wanting to rewatch this anyway, like for the show, so I picked it up. So this movie is the feature film debut of a woman named Jennifer Kent, who was actually an actor for about 20 years before sort of pivoting into directing. Now, how she actually learned to do directing, I guess, like other than, you know, just being an actor and being on sets and knowing about it from that angle, what she did was that when she decided to go into directing, she contacted the very controversial Danish director Lars von Trier, and asked to assist on his 2003 movie Dogville, which is very good if you haven't seen it. Nicole Kidman is in it. He agreed, and so she went and sort of like got her education on the job, so to speak. Incidentally, Jennifer Kent also directed the 2018 movie The Nightingale, which I've heard is fantastic, but I haven't seen it yet. It's really, really high up on my to-watch list. I don't think it's exactly a horror movie, but it's supposed to be, like, really harrowing and fucked up, so I'm looking forward to watching that as well. Now, she had actually made a short film back in 2005, which was called Monster. And it was sort of like a small-scale version of what would eventually become The Babadook. She started working on the script for that back in about 2009 and went through like a bunch of different iterations of it. Now, from the first, she seemed to have had the idea that she wanted this movie sort of like not only to be an exploration of certain aspects of motherhood that weren't usually featured in horror films or really in films in general, and she also kind of wanted the visuals of the movie to harken back to, like, the silent film days, in particular the work of Georges Méliès, you know, who did a lot of trick films and, like, silent movies back in the old days, and the German Expressionist movement. She actually initially wanted to shoot The Babadook in black and white, but eventually that ended up not happening. Also, she was real into, like, the films of, like, Roman Polanski and David Lynch and stuff like that, so she wanted that kind of, like, vibe to it as well. In the story, we're following a very frazzled single mother named Amelia. Now, she's played by Essie Davis, who honestly should have gotten an Oscar nomination for this if the Oscars were in the habit of like giving nominations to people in horror movies. I mean, I know there's some exceptions and they have like gotten better in the last few years, but generally genre films are usually not recognized, but she completely should have been because she was fucking great in this. Oh, I want to say too that actually Essie Davis was friends with Jennifer Kent. Like they went to the same acting school and were like friends for the whole time. So I thought that was kind of neat too. So 7 years prior to the events of the film, Amelia's husband, Oscar, was killed in this horrifying car crash while the couple were en route to the hospital. Like, Amelia was having their baby, like their first child, Sam. But Oscar obviously died and didn't make it. So Amelia, it seems, has never really come to terms with the loss of her husband. And she's kind of like buried it deep down within herself. She doesn't really want to talk about it. She doesn't want to move on with her life, even though it's been almost 7 years. She also harbors this really deep but seemingly unconscious resentment toward her son Samuel, essentially kind of blaming him for killing her husband because, you know, it was kind of, I guess she sees it as like, oh, it was his fault that we were in the car at that time. You know, that's when we went into labor. So she's, obviously it's not rational, but, you know, it's an understandable emotion to have. One of the things that this manifests as, too, is that she actually has never let Samuel celebrate his birthday on the actual day that he was born, because that was the same day that her husband died, too, so she just can't face it. So usually they have, like, a joint party with him and his cousin, whose birthdays are sort of around the same time. So he always has his birthday, like, on his cousin's birthday. So that's how they've kind of, like, worked it out. So the kid, who is now almost 7 years old, it's, like, approaching his birthday, like, it's only a few weeks away. He senses his mother's hatred of him. And this sort of like makes him act out in increasingly destructive ways, I guess you'd say. Like, you know, he screams a lot. You know, he's like always like in the back, like shrieking at the top of his lungs. He builds weapons and takes them to school. He, you know, shoots off weapons in the house and like breaks windows, like shit like that. At one point he pushes his cousin out of a treehouse and like breaks her nose after she like teases him about not having a dad, that kind of shit. Now, Amelia is offered a few lifelines in order to sort of like help her deal with this demon spawn that she has. For example, she has like an elderly neighbor named Grace. And she's very caring and very supportive and watches the kids sometimes and, like, keeps an eye on him and things like that. And the school authorities, after Samuel, like, gets in trouble for bringing, like a weapon of some kind, like, to school, they try to, like, talk to her, like, work with her about it. They're like, look, you know, we want to help him, but he's kind of, like, dangerous to the other kids, so maybe the best thing to do, we should have a compromise. We can isolate him from the other children, but give him a tutor, like, one-on-one, like, to work with him for his behavioral problems. But Amelia really seems defensive, and she's kind of, like, reluctant to really, like, unburden herself, I guess. I think it's because she doesn't really want to be seen as a failure, like, as a mother. This dynamic is kind of highlighted by her little bit contentious relationship with her sister, who is the mother of the cousin, because the sister absolutely does judge Amelia for being, like, you know, why haven't you moved on with your life? Like, what are you doing? Like, how are you mothering that kid? The kid's a brat, blah, blah, blah. And she doesn't really want to listen to Amelia's problems, like, she's kind of over it, and she won't even, like, come to the house because she's, like, I'm not being anywhere around that kid, like, he sucks, and all this other kind of stuff. So it's super not helpful. She's not really getting a lot of support from her family, at least in that, you know, in that respect. So into this kind of cauldron of angst, there appears on a bookshelf in Samuel's room this mysterious handcrafted little children's book called Mr. Babadook. Amelia isn't really sure where it came from, supposedly. But she starts reading it to Samuel, like, he picks it out, and she starts reading it to him one night. And she only gets a few pages in before she realizes that this book is really not appropriate for a six-year-old child, because it's about this really unsettling monster with this kind of, like, really spooky, like, white face, these creepy white eyes, like, this big smile with, like, these creepy teeth. This kind of slouchy top hat, this big black cloak, and these long, like, razory fingers. So the monster keeps, like, wanting to be let in, and seemingly wants to kind of like terrorize their little their small little family there. Now, even though Amelia stops reading it before the story gets too upsetting, Samuel is still kind of traumatized by the story and starts to become convinced that the Babadook is real, which again kind of like amps up his whole anxiety thing, and like he starts building more weapons like to fight the monster, to protect his mom and stuff like that. So over the course of the story, Samuel's behavior like starts to become worse and worse as he becomes more terrified of the monster. And Amelia kind of also starts to sort of lose her grip on sanity as the kid's antics sort of like drive her past the breaking point. She also begins to see the monster. And honestly, I'm not gonna lie, the monster is still creepy as fuck. Like the design of the monster is like really cool, especially in the way that it kind of like skitters around. Like it almost seems like handmade, like it's a puppet made out of paper, and it just, you know, the way that it moves is like really like uncanny and like otherworldly, and I really do love that. Also the voice that he has, because he calls on the phone once and he like whispers in her ear and stuff, is like really croaky, and that's like really unnerving as well. So at one stage near like right at the beginning of the third act of the movie, Amelia seemingly becomes possessed by the Babadook. And that sort of, like, causes her to act upon these murderous impulses that she has. She kills the little doggy, so, you know, just know that going in. I could have done without that, but I know that's why they did. You know how I am about, like, don't leave the kitties and puppies alone, like, in the movies. Horror movies, they always want to kill the cute little animals. I'm like, kill all the kids you want. It's like, just, god damn it, just leave the fucking animals alone. But yeah, the dog does get killed in this one, but you know that was gonna happen. So she does kill the dog, but she gets, like, all fucking murdery and shit like that. But, you know, it's all kind of resolved. In the end, the monster isn't really so much defeated as it's sort of, like, contained and managed, as Amelia kind of learns to come to terms with these complex emotions that ultimately spawned the monster. So, as with many monster movies, the character of the Babadook is kind of like playing two roles, in the sense that it's a monster, but it's also like a representation. On the one hand, he does seem to be a real monster. Both Amelia and Samuel can see him, and he does seem to have like some impacts like in the real world. On the other hand, he's also a creation of Amelia's sort of like simmering animosity toward her child and the unresolved feelings she has about her husband's death. It's not so much that the monster represents grief. I think it's more represents her, the unspoken hatred that she has toward her kid and her guilt at feeling that way, because she doesn't think she's supposed to feel that way. A criticism that I see a lot of this movie is that people felt cheated because the monster turned out to be quote-unquote not real, but I don't really think that's the case, and it also kind of seems to be like missing the point a little bit. I mean, you could also argue that the ghosts that Jack Nicholson sees in The Shining also aren't real, but are simply avatars for his sort of like raging alcoholism and his antagonism toward his family. But really, nobody complains about that. The way I see it, I mean, the Babadook is absolutely real. I mean, even though it's implied that Amelia created the book herself, like there's a couple scenes where she has, you know, what looks like charcoal, like on her hands and things like that. She did model the creature after her son's like magician getup, like with the hat and the cloak and everything. And she later sort of like personifies the monster as she kind of gives into her own hatred and essentially becomes the monster. I'm kind of the opinion that the sort of depth of her hostility toward the kid brought the monster quite literally like into the world. And the thing about it is, a lot of horror movies kind of play with this trope, so I don't know why people singled out the Babadook and complained about that like in particular, because a lot of horror movies do that, but again, whatever. Another very common gripe that I see with this movie is that, probably the most common gripe I feel like, is that Samuel is an annoying little shit who you would really like to drop kick into next week. Now, I will agree with that. That is absolutely true. But again, that's absolutely the point of that character. At the beginning of the movie, you're actually supposed to sympathize with Amelia as she has to deal with this incorrigible little hell beast that's like running around her house. You know, I'm not a parent myself, but I've known enough parents that have told me that there are lots of times when your kid is like misbehaving that you actively dislike this child and you feel kind of like bad about it. So I really do love that this movie took this very common but also a little bit taboo emotion that a lot of people have, and sort of like did sort of like an exploration of it. Now, so the viewer is supposed to think that Samuel sucks and to want to strangle the brat, right? I mean, that's kind of what you're supposed to feel about him. But then slowly, as the story unfolds, you start to realize that Samuel is just a little kid. I mean, he's just like a vulnerable little six-year-old kid. And even though he's awful, he's only responding to the way his mother treats him in the only way that he knows how to respond. Because again, he's just a little kid. So when Amelia goes kind of like full-on monster toward the end, your sympathies have kind of like shifted towards Samuel as he sort of like falls into the crosshairs, and you realize you've been sympathizing with a woman who is gonna strangle her own child, you know what I mean? Which is probably not a place you want to be. And Samuel actually does become more sympathetic as the movie goes on, because you see that he actually does love his mother and he wants to protect her, but he's only acting that way because of this kind of monster that's within her that he senses, and he senses that he's in danger from her, and he doesn't really know how to respond to that other than by, like, acting out. Now, I have also seen the argument made that the kid's behavior was, like, too over the top. I will note, though, that I grew up around lots and lots of kids. I don't have any kids of my own, but like I said, I grew up around lots and lots of kids. Like, I have several siblings and tons of cousins, and my parents ran a daycare at one point, so I was around a lot of little kids all the time. I've actually been firsthand witness to a handful of children who acted absolutely the same way that Samuel does in this movie. I kind of feel like nowadays that would maybe be diagnosed as maybe ADHD, or, you know, maybe even like some aspects of autism or something like that. So I don't really think it's over the top in particular. Like I said, you're supposed to hate the kid, so if it's a little bit over the top, that's why. Although this film does seem somewhat divisive, like in the horror community, I guess, I'm in the camp of people who really, really loved it. I mean, I really loved it. Had just these arresting visuals, like that monster looked so cool, like it was like a paper puppet, and like the way it kind of like moved around on the ceiling and stuff, like so great, like so creepy, and it just had this really great, like, all around sort of like eerie vibe, like very cool, very shadowy, very Silent Movie-esque. I love that kind of stuff, and I really did like the sort of metaphorical deep dive that it did into these complicated feelings that that some mothers have toward their offspring. The acting in this is also phenomenal, and it really did sell the escalating horror between Amelia and her son, like, as the monster got more and more powerful. I mean, not everyone is into this movie, and that's okay, but I really think this is easily one of my favorite horror movies of the past several years. So whether you agree or disagree, let me know in the comments, and we'll have a discussion about it. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.